Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcloon Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcloonenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
Hello and a very good morning to you on a very wet and blustery Saturday, the 6th of April. Hope you're in, you're safe if you can, or if you're out and about, you're taking all the necessary precautions. It looks like many, if not all, kids' matches across the Midlands appear to have hit the dust this morning. I know our house people are sitting at home and had a big days of activities planned, but all has been cancelled, and I suppose all for the better. But that leads to a bigger issue, really. Pitches, fields, everywhere is just waterlogged at this point, to the point that it's actually causing huge implications, particularly in the farming sector, which of course will also affect our access to fruit and vegetables, and really will affect exactly what goes on the dinner plate over the next year. Later in the show, you're going to hear from a Laois farm business who is absolutely dependent on growing crops in order to produce the product that they have been awarded for at European level, most recently up in September last year. It has huge implications for them. They haven't even got to plant the very crop they're dependent on just yet. And that is replicated by so many farmers right across the Midlands, right across the country. So, and to look deeper at the implications that might have on that very fruit and veg that we're purchasing, I'll be joined by a grocery retail expert later, also to talk about what the implications are and what we might expect to see. And I guess the question is, will it just be business as usual? If you're going shopping, are you just still going to fill your trolley with various fruit and vegetables without looking at where they're coming from? You know, will we see any disruption from a supply chain perspective? And what questions can we ask ourselves then from, you know, in how we support local businesses and communities and how we try and reduce the carbon footprint associated with the products we're buying? It's a complex one. It's a big one. Looking forward to talking about that a little bit later. Around about 25 past 10 this morning, you're going to hear from the latest person to declare themselves as a candidate in the upcoming European elections. Very well-known figure from County Longford, in the public eye for well over 30 years, has been doing a lot of work in his local community and the wider Midlands community, and he'll be here to tell us why he has decided to run for election and join a list of a growing list of almost famous people that are running for the Europeans. And actually, current MEP for this area, Luke Ming Flanagan, tweeted last night that he's up against two RTE stars in the upcoming elections. So we'll dig a bit deeper into that today from around 25 past 10. If you want to be part of this morning's conversation, as always, do so by text or WhatsApp. 083 3010 103 is the simplest and easiest way to get us here in the studio. If you want to give Nelly a call on 0818 300 103, you can get your view across as well. And looking forward to hearing your views on all the stuff we're going to discuss this morning. But before all that, GAA Go. Usually if you mention that over the last year or two, people kind of go, oh, jeez, that thing where, you know, it got so much controversy last year that people perceive that so many GAA games were pushed behind a paywall. Now, lots of people find it really, really useful. You know, if you're very much used to streaming, you've got good internet connections, it gives you even more access to all those GAA games. Because if you look at the schedule, there are many, many more games on over the last couple of years than there were in previous years. Now, this year, about 38 games will be available on GAA Go. And FRS Recruitment, of course, headed by Colin Donnery from Coleraine and County Laois, has again renewed its partnership with GAA Go for the next 3 years. And FRS see it as a huge opportunity also to promote what's great about Ireland and to give access to GAA games to the Irish diaspora right across the world. And again, which was really showcased around St. Patrick's Day. And we know now, for many reasons, lots of Irish people are all across the world, and it does give them that link back home and that easy access where maybe they can't stream traditional RTE or other services wherever they're based. So it has its pros, it has cons, it's generated a lot of controversy. We've seen many local politicians calling for it to be scrapped and questions asked about whether the GAA should be a partner in the same service that an RTE should be in the same service that is broadcasting their games. But like, whether you like it or whether you don't, whether you agree or not, it's here to stay. But in order to try and make sure that certain people can get access to games, because we often speak of people who are not that tech savvy, maybe people from a slightly older generation who aren't quite up to speed with technology in terms of streaming, maybe don't even have mobile phones that are capable of streaming games. For a second year in a row, Nursing Homes Ireland has continued its partnership with GAA Go, and it's going to bring these 38 games this season to well over 35,000 residents and staff in all HICWA registered private and voluntary nursing homes across the country. To dig a little bit deeper and find out more, I'm delighted to be joined by Tadhg Daly, the CEO of Nursing Homes Ireland. A very good morning, Tadhg.
Good morning, Ronan. Good to speak with you.
Tadhg, this is your second year for this partnership as well. What was it that drew you to it in the first place?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you say, I suppose last year when it was announced, there was a little bit of controversy. So we took the initiative and contacted GAA Go because we were concerned that residents in nursing homes might lose out, as it were. I suppose ultimately nursing homes are embedded in the community, similar to the GAA. So we saw it as a very worthwhile partnership to make the games available to residents in nursing homes. And to be fair to GAA Go, from the very outset, they were hugely enthused by what we were proposing. Last year was a little bit different in terms of they made it available to competing counties. So if your match was on this weekend, you got a pass for the weekend. But we're excited this year to announce that they have stepped up again and said basically they're making a season pass available to all members of Nursing Homes Ireland, and indeed we've shared that with a few non-members as well. So yeah, look, the GAA is, as I said, is hugely embedded in community. I don't have to tell people in Laois and Offaly and Westmeath how important the GAA is. So we're looking forward to it, and it'll be an opportunity for residents to gather and to be, I suppose, plugged in, if you like, when the games are on in their nationally, but also, I suppose, in their local county.
And just to clarify, that is a pass, so it's free access for the nursing homes.
It is, absolutely, yeah. It's a season pass, so it's from yesterday, effectively, because I believe Galway are playing London today. I think Mayo and New York next week, and then the week after, there's a number of games. And there's also, Diego have historical last year's games on. They have interviews with players and with managers as well. So, absolutely, it is a free pass for the season for all nursing home residents. So it's an exciting development, and one that has been well received by residents and by our members, and indeed people in the public that I've been speaking with as well said that is a great initiative.
When it comes to actually streaming the games then, are you streaming on kind of traditional televisions, or are you giving residents access in their own rooms and in a private setting as well?
Yeah, well, I suppose ultimately it's one pass for the home. So what we'd be planning in most cases would be that it would be shown in the day room, because that, I suppose, creates a sense of excitement. Now, for some residents that may not be able to travel to the day room, then, you know, local arrangements can be put in place. But ideally what we're hoping is that, you know, activities in nursing homes is important. I mean, a nursing home, while yes, there's medical care, this is very much a social care setting. So what we want to ensure is that, you know, people during the week on an ongoing basis, people have access to activities, to music, to cards, to art and drama. So what we're hoping is that, you know, residents will go to watch them. Family and friends may come in and watch the games with them. So, you know, it'll be different in each nursing home across the country. But ultimately, it's to create a sense of occasion and to celebrate that sense of occasion on the day that the games are on.
You can imagine maybe a spike in visitors too, and as you say, it might bring that extra sense of community back to the nursing homes. You could be jammed, you could be selling tickets eventually.
Well, there'll be no charges anyway from a nursing home point of view. But yeah, look, it is important. Look, visitors to nursing homes, I mean, nursing homes are, as I say, very much a social setting. You know, the vast majority are over 85. There are people who have, you know, multiple comorbidities, you know, high dependency. But like, what we want to do is make sure that they still live the life that they wish to live. And if they had interest in GAA in the community, then they should have remained that interest in the GAA or indeed any other sport or any other activity when they enter the nursing homes. And as you say, for visitors, you know, people love to see people coming, obviously. And that, you know, we had a period of COVID. Don't want to go back to that. But on that occasion, people couldn't visit. So now that people can visit and visit freely, and use the opportunity of maybe doing it around a match or a match day, you know, coming in the morning, maybe with the jersey on, and creating that sense of excitement on the day itself will be hugely, hugely important.
I suppose it probably does bring that little bit of almost, you know, like that sense of community back, because many people might have moved out of their home county that they've lived in for most of their lives to go and live in a nursing home that could be, you know, one, two counties up the road. So again, it's given them something, given them that link back to their community.
Oh yeah, 100%, and we've seen that unfortunately with an increasing number of closures. Now today isn't about the challenges in the sector, and we'll have another opportunity to discuss that, but you're dead right. I mean, you know, for people, a sense of place and a sense of community is an important element of all our lives. And the GAA is one of those. It's not the only one, but it's a unique one, I suppose, if you like. I'm a GAA supporter myself as well, so I know what it means to communities. I know what it means to people when their club or their county is going well in the championship. So it's important that residents don't lose out on that, and that's why, you know, the GAA Go and indeed, you know, terrestrial television will be an important part of the short championship as well, as we know. And I know that in local nursing homes across the country, they use other initiatives. I mean, many clubs now would stream their own club games as well. So it's a hugely, hugely important part and a very exciting time. You know, we'll be encouraging people to put up the colours, put up the flags, and people, you know, put on the county jersey for the day as well. So, as I say, it does create a sense of excitement, and what it does is it I suppose it plugs the person back into that community that they came from, as you quite rightly say.
You mentioned there about COVID, and we're all fairly aware of what happened, and really the nursing homes took it very, it was very harsh on nursing homes, you know, even from a
yes.
from that human perspective of not allowing visitors in, and particularly where people passed away and their family couldn't be around them. And you know, we all say we don't want to go back there, and I think we mean from, you know, going back to those restrictions and the lockdowns. But I think with nursing homes and lots of aspects of our society, there will be revisits. There's been many calls for, you know, public inquiries, and indeed an upcoming candidate in the European elections has actually called a few weeks ago for the public inquiry to start on that. So there's a lot more to go on that story yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, society at large, there was a lot of impact on society, you know, children in schools. You know, people lost their livelihoods. But yeah, you're dead right. Those in the nursing home sector definitely bore the brunt of it. And as I say, I don't wish to revisit it today, but, you know, we've been engaging with government around what they term is a review of it, because ultimately we do need to learn the lessons. You know, is there something we could have done differently as a society? Is there something we can prepare for if there is going to be, you know, a pandemic again into the future? So it is important for us to learn the lessons, there's no doubt. You know, and to be fair, it's also important to acknowledge those that work so hard in the sector throughout the pandemic. I mean, the staff across the health service, but particularly staff in nursing homes, I mean, they did a really Trojan job, sometimes putting their own lives at risk going into the nursing home, not knowing what was facing them on the day. So very proud of the staff who worked in the sector across COVID.
Harsh times and tough times and everybody as well. But look, this is a very positive move to a lovely initiative and a lovely partnership between yourselves and Nursing Home Ireland and GAA Go, and hopefully one that will continue long into the future. Tadhg Daly, thank you so much for that this morning.
Thank you, dear Ron, and good morning.
And that's Tadhg Daly there, the CEO of Nursing Homes Ireland, and that partnership, you know, again, free pass now for all the nursing homes in both HICWA and private nursing homes to allow the residents access to the games that are on GAA Go. So again, you know, has to be a nice positive message on that one. Now, time for a quick break. And after that, like later on, we'll look at the severe impact the wet weather is having on our farming community, and indeed the impact it will have on our grocery, on our trolleys and on our dinner plates. But before that, you're going to meet one of the latest persons to declare themselves in the race for the upcoming European elections.
Saturday View on Midlands 183 with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
Thank you for the listener who has texted in just to let us know that train service is delayed in Laois as a tree has fallen across the line. And we just got an update due from the Éireann and Twitter that services are currently suspended to/from Houston due to a large tree on the line near Monaster Evan. Staff are en route to it, and updates will follow as soon as any further information comes available. So thank you to the listener there for alerting us to that. Huge delays there on the outbound trains from Houston as well. Another listener has texted in on the subject of the GAA and says the GAA want to go back to cash on the gate. It's putting a lot of people off going to games. That's Moss and Kinnity. Do you agree with Moss? 083 3010 103. Text or WhatsApp 0818 300 103 if you want to give us a call. Yeah, again, just more people again texting in there about that issue on the train line. Thanks for that. Keep your texts coming in, and any other obstructions you see on the roads or train lines or anything else, just let us know, and we will let the great people of the Midlands know that. Now, when it comes to the Midlands and taking action and representing your people, many names have been entered into the ring for the upcoming European elections. Most recently, Fine Gael announced that alongside current MEP Maria Walsh, former jockey Nina Carberry would enter the race. Maria, of course, former Rose of Tralee. So kind of sometimes you wonder, is there more of a public persona, a public profile that lends itself to people running for European election. One of the latest people to enter that their name into the hat, and it was widely predicted during the week and was confirmed yesterday evening, is none other than Kieran Mullooly, who of course was a former Midlands correspondent with RTE and has been undertaking a huge amount of work in his local community over the past 30 years also. He put out an official statement last night, and he's going to run for Independent Ireland Party, and he accepted an invitation from Michael Morris TD to join the European Parliament elections for Midlands North West constituency on the 7th of June. Kieran joins me now. Very good morning, Kieran.
Hey, good morning, Ronan, and good morning to your listeners.
Kieran, at a time where we see, certainly at kind of national political level, many people seem to be stepping away from politics and trying to get away from it entirely, what is attracting so many people, yourself included, to run for the Europeans?
Yeah, I mean, a good question, Ronan. A lot of people have said to me in the last 24 hours, you know, are you mad? What are you doing? Why are you getting into this game? But I mean, there's one, I suppose, simple reason that I've worked in community development for over 30 years. I've been involved in GAA, I've been involved in Lions Club movement, I've been involved in social inclusion work, as you know, and I'm recently in tourism. And every facet of the work I'm involved in, I have to say, is governed by rules and regulations that come from Europe. And it's become more and more frustrating for me trying to do my job. I'll give you a very simple example, Ronan. The very first effort at just transition in this country by the state, when Bord na Mona closed down and 2,000 jobs were lost about 4 years ago now, we all got together as communities to try and get in there and avail of funding to do something in our communities. You know what's the biggest problem with that, Ronan? EU state aid rules were the biggest problem with that. They prevented us from getting 100% funding in loads of areas. We had to put up, communities had to put up 20%, 10%, 15%. We didn't have the money. And it stopped loads of projects in Offaly, in Laois, Westmeath, Longford. And they never got off the ground. They never got the money. And, you know, I was one of the people who was kicking myself, who was tearing my hair out. And I kept saying, you know, someday maybe I'll be brave enough to stand up and try and go in there into the European Parliament to scrutinise laws on state aid as well as key issues like health and housing. And as someone in my own family said to me, you cannot be a hurler on the ditch all your life. So here I am. I'm going forward. Put my name forward.
You're obviously very confident of getting elected into it. When it comes to the very point, though, of trying to almost change or affect European policy, have you identified clearly that going for as an MEP is a better route? You know, if you go in as an Independent Ireland Party member, you probably have to join another big group to even look at beginning to affect some sort of change. Did you look at the option of running in the local general elections and try to start literally on the ground in your home parish first?
No, I didn't, is the honest answer, Ronan. And I want to make it very clear, I have no interest in running in my own constituency, even of Roscommon, East Galway, or Longford, Westmeath, even. And I'll tell you why, because the issue I was focused on was particularly the Bord na Mona issue and those jobs, and particularly the way we're going to work our way out of the crisis we're in at the moment. There's been two stabs at just transition through Europe at the moment. One was done by the state, Parliament in Dublin. It was a small project, about 30 million really was spent on that. It didn't work for the reasons I've explained earlier. The second one underway at the moment is focused on tourism and development. That's going on, but neither of them are actually getting through to workers. The people who lost their jobs because Bord na Mona closed down, the individual workers haven't seen a bob, haven't seen a penny, to be honest about it. There's been no person-led focus on them. I get met in the street all the time and I say, you know, you're doing great work for tourism, you're doing great work for community development, but you know what? 100 of us up there in that works lost our job, and no one came to our door and offered us a package of retraining or an opportunity to set up our own individual company. Nobody actually said you're going to get a support, and I think that has to come from Europe. I think the last EU just transition package in Europe was designed by the Germans and the Polish for their coal mining regions. I've said this to you before. It wasn't designed for Ireland. I think the next EU just transition package, which will be designed over the next 3 years at European level and scrutinised by the European Parliament, will have to be person-led. Workers who lost their jobs in Bora, Blackwater and all these places want people at their door. They don't want agencies, groups and community groups looking after them. They want person-led initiatives. And that's the reason why I'm going to Europe and not going to seek it at home.
I remember a couple of years back, there was reports from North Macedonia. They had something like 40% or 26% unemployment, a just transition package, again, to move them away from coal production of, I think it was 2 or 3 billion in comparison to a couple of hundred million in Ireland. And some of the rumblings coming from Europe were, well, Ireland is at full employment. Your unemployment is less than 4%. it was almost just get on with it, guys, as well. What would you say in retort to and say a kind of an allegation like that?
I think anybody who looks at the most recent documents and strategies on things like spatial strategies will see that the significant employment base of this country, Ronan, is still on the east coast of the country. And it may be acceptable for some people to say, you know, we're full employment and that's fine. But I know that my neighbours here in on the Longford-Roscommon border and your neighbours in Offaly and Laois have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, if not earlier, 5 o'clock in the morning, and head to the east coast to get their job. Now, under Gordon Amona and ESP, that was not the case. They had jobs at home, and what's more, their children had summer jobs at home that helped pay for their education in the autumn. That's all gone, and it hasn't been replaced. And to me, there may be full employment in this country. It is on the east coast. If you are aged between 25 and 60 in the Midlands, in Laois, Offaly, or Westmeath this morning, I can tell you the vast majority of people are travelling 50, 60, 70, 80 miles. And I don't think that should be our future. I don't think it's acceptable. There was a just transition process for the Germans and for the Polish. Do you know how long it took? 28 years it was put in place. 28 years. We in the Midlands here got 28 months after the announcement that Shannon Bridge was closing and Lanes was closing. I don't think it was fair. And instead of just coming on with people like yourself, Ron, which I have been doing in the past and giving out about it, I'm now putting up my hand and I'm going to stand up and be counted on this. Putting my name forward and asking the people of Laois, Offaly and Westmeath to give me the number one on the 7th of June.
You, in making that decision then, you've decided not to go as an independent, but to actually join Independent Ireland Party. Tell us about that party. It's a relatively new party. And what was it that made you feel that they were the party for you?
Well, I'll tell you in one straight answer why I did it. Michael Fitzmaurice, the name of Michael Fitzmaurice is the reason. He came to me initially to discuss this issue. He was contemplating running himself, I know, in the European elections. And, you know, I have said in the past I wasn't interested in party politics. I was interested of pursuing things as independently as I could. He showed me the setup that was involved in the new party. On the front page of the website, if anyone goes into it today, it says, on the very front page, it says, ethos of the party means that the independence of the members will be respected. And what does that mean? If there's a vote in the European Parliament or in Leinster House on a matter of conscience, they will have a free vote. They won't be equipped. Unlike the structure in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the Greens and elsewhere, when the party whip will be applied, it's been made clear from day one that I will not be bullied by a political party into voting on issues like abortion or on any issues that come up in the future. I'll vote on my own conscience. And that was the key issue. Michael Fitzmaurice said to me, I know you're like myself, you like your independence. And he said, I know you know the country well, you know the situation in the Midlands with regard to the bogs. You know the way things have changed. You know the way we're trying to regenerate the area. And I think with Michael Fitzmaurice working in the Dáil and me hopefully working in Europe, we'll have a good team going forward to put people first every time we can.
On the website independentireland.ie, it's very front and centre there. I mean, one of the main objectives is tackling government waste, mismanagement and overspend, particularly looking at areas like non-government organisations, the funding for Ukrainian refugees, international protection applicants as well, direct provisions, you know, talking about the huge amount of overspend that's been alleged there as well. Are those issues that you will also be following up on, or again, is that the freedom that running for the party has given you? That you don't have. If you have a totally different opinion on that, how does that sit within the party?
The position will be run. I'll be canvassing on everything over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks. Obviously, as I've made it clear, number one, the just transition issue and the lack of jobs for the 2,000 people who lost them in the Midlands is my top priority. Rural affairs, farming is my top priority. Huge changes going on there. I mean, I'm going to be one of the people, you're going to be hearing it from me week after week, that we are not accepting a cull of the national herd. That's going to be a big issue, one of the biggest issues for us going forward. And finding solutions to it and putting forward solutions to the problem is going to be our aim in the coming weeks. But we will also be, I will be commenting on issues such as refugees. I'll be commenting on issues such as disability. It's very close to my heart. There's a whole tranche of legislation coming through Europe with regard to providing personal assistance to people with disability. It's an ongoing campaign. They're entitled to it under their UN human rights. They haven't got it. So that's going to be one of my big ones as well. And I will be expressing my own opinion on all those issues. I won't be whipped by the party into any particular stance. You won't hear me defending what the other TDs in the party are saying. I will defend my own stance going forward as an independent member of Independent Ireland.
Kieran Mullooly, thank you so much for that and all the very best with your campaign. And undoubtedly, we'll be hearing a lot more from you and the other candidates on Midlands 103 in the coming weeks.
Thanks very much, Ron. Good morning.
And that's Kieran Mullooly there, who has just confirmed as of last night that he will be running for Independent Ireland in the upcoming European elections. Again, that's again lots of other people around the area, and I'm sure in the next 6 weeks in the run up to that vote, you'll be hearing from all those on Midlands 103. So June, after that, after a quick break, we're going to look at that horrendous issue that the wet weather and rain is having on our farmers across the Midlands. And it, of course, has knock-on effects on retail, on restaurants, on what's on our dinner plates on a daily basis. Find out exactly the scale of that challenge and the devastation after this quick break.
Saturday View on Midlands 183. With thanks to Lumcloon Energy. Pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcloonEnergy.com.
And I know there's a status yellow wind warning for across the Midlands County right up until 8 p.m. this evening. And it, of course, is bringing more and more and more rain and really no end in sight to it. And we just cannot seem to get away from it. It, of course, has a huge impact. As I said earlier in the show, majority of kids' matches cancelled all across the Midlands today and tomorrow because of the wet weather. But even before that, it's going to be so hard for trainings to take place or games because pitches are waterlogged. And they don't seem to be getting any drier. And that's just looking at an activity, a sporting hobby. When it comes to the business side of things, and particularly for farmers, it is absolutely horrendous times. In Agriland yesterday, there was an interview with David Walsh, chemist from Ballykilcavan Farm and Brewery. Again, struggling big time to even get planting the very barley and hops that they need to make their product. And a similar thing applies to the Scully family from the Merry Mill, also in County Leash. On their Instagram yesterday, Kevin Scully had a post up, and he basically had written, they said smile, things could be worse. We smiled and things got worse. It really is a critical time for farmers right across the Midlands. Very good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Ronan.
Kevin,
how
just
are we?
Give us an idea, I suppose, as to the scale of the challenge that now faces you.
Yeah, no, it's compounded from last year. We had a really bad back end the last year. We lost about a third of the crop we sold. We lost about 35 acres that never got harvested due to the bad weather last September. And then we never got back into plant any winter crop. And now we're into April and we've still no spring crop in the ground. And for us, we're the sole producer of organic gluten-free oats in Ireland. And if we don't plant, we can't harvest. And there's nowhere else we can buy in a product. There's no one else producing what we produce. So, yeah, it's quite finite. And it's becoming worrying now. Definitely the mental resolve is starting to wear down. You're thinking every week it's going to get a little bit better, but it's just not happening. And it's going on for so long now. It started raining mid-June last year. And we're still dealing with it come April the following year. So, yeah, it's been a real challenge. Definitely the biggest challenge I've ever faced in agriculture anyway.
And this is coming on the back of, again, huge recognition late last year where you were the first Irish recipient of an EU Organic Award, again, for the work you're doing there. For some farmers, there's an option of maybe sowing an alternative crop and just trying to keep some sort of income coming in. For yourselves, obviously, that's not an option. Are there any supports out there? I presume things like insurance for business disruption probably doesn't apply because it's linked to the weather.
There isn't. There's not great support. And we haven't had great help now from the Department of Agriculture. They've been very disappointing last year. Now we're still in an ongoing battle with them. They brought in an unharvested crop scheme. We didn't qualify that with that scheme because we planted peas with our oats last year. We done that. We planted the peas to fix nitrogen to the crop to produce a better bushel weight in our oats. But because we put the peas in, we didn't qualify for that. And that makes it so difficult, because the financial loss has been huge. And then, as I say, we're dealing with the whole concern now, if we run out of product, we're out of business. So the challenges have been great. The government, I definitely feel for, and it's not just us, there's loads of other small producers out there that I don't think the government see them as the value they are to the country. We people in Ireland, producing food in Ireland for Irish people, they should be in a priority zone. We import enough, we're highly, reliant on imported stuff. And I definitely think the government really needs to step up at this stage and support small food producers. There's no doubt.
It's like even if you look at the potato industry, you know, there's a huge misconception that the majority of the chips you buy from the chipper are made from Irish potatoes. A vast majority aren't. Huge imports coming from the UK, particularly for the Mara's Pipers as well. I think that there is that disconnect there too, and people aren't hearing. With local representatives now say there's a Laois man as president of the IFA, does that make any difference for yourselves? Like, is there any representing, particularly next week when it looks likely Simon Harris will be sworn in as Taoiseach, and he's already said he was going to make a commitment to Irish businesses and SMEs. Any confidence that anything can be done next week, or anybody that you think could lobby on behalf of businesses like yourselves?
Well, look, it would be interesting to see. A lot of talking gets done, but like, as I say, talk is cheap. We need to see real action. So, look, it's probably, there is a window there at the moment now. There's a good chance there's an election looming. They're going to want to look good. So you'd be hoping they'll step up at this stage and do something really positive. For it's a really struggling sector now. Like, it's compounded from, and it's out of our control. But even for me, what's so infuriating, I see our energy bills went through the roof. Like, we're highly dependent on electricity here for our mill. And I see ESB made $1 billion in profit last year while our energy bills are gone through the roof and we're struggling to make a living and thinking there's something wrong. How can they make $1 billion and we're struggling to exist and they've driven up the price of our energy? So like, it's stuff like that, it's infuriating for a small business that there's no relief for someone in food production on energy. Like, there's no sense there.
Is there a bigger question too as to that overall kind of national policy, you know, kind of long-term commitment as to how we actually use our land? You know, somebody could turn around and say to you, sure, why don't you just put a solar farm on your and supply energy to the big data centres and everyone's happy and forget about where this gluten-free, you know, organic food is coming from?
Oh, for sure. But when you have a passion for something, I believe in what I'm doing, I think at some stage, someone's going to see a real value. This is a food bank. In the event of some big disaster anywhere in the world, if you have more small people like me with a food bank, I could feed most of Leinster on porridge for probably 6 months with what I've here in a small grain store. I think people need to wake up. There's a huge value in having people like me dotted around the country with a bank. Like, that's more valuable than gold. Than anything. You know, if food runs out, it doesn't matter how much money you have, food is the most important thing in the world, and high quality, nutritious, dense food, like that's the gold of the world. You know, so we need to start realizing we need more people with food banks, and same with small market gardeners and people like that who have grown really good quality vegetables. They are so valuable. We need to really realise and protect and ensure that they are there in the event of disasters coming our way.
Well said. And you know, people like you, I think, should be running for our local elections too, but it's probably not even entering your radar at the minute, given what's facing you as well. Kevin, just hang on the line there. I'm going to bring Malachy O'Connor into this conversation. Malachy is from Food First Consultant and has a vasty experience in terms of grocery and retail as well. Malachy, from the point of view of the impact that this weather could have on supermarket supplies, is the average consumer not likely to see any difference because there'll still be fruit and veg, but we just don't bother looking at where it's actually coming from?
Well, Ronan, there's an argument both ways. Like, most shoppers are probably on autopilot buying the same things every week and not paying a huge amount of attention, but actually they're paying about 24 or 25% more now for their groceries than they were 3 years ago. And that's kind of become a new normal for them. So there will be shortages and there will be price increases this year if crops, you know, potato crops that would have been harvested in June or May haven't been sown in January, that's just not going to happen. There won't be any new season queens, for example, this year, which is something that people do look forward to because it's a fantastic product. And if they don't get into the fields now in the next week or two, there'll be an impact on the second harvest, which comes around August, September.
From a buyer's perspective then, say a supermarket buyers, are they now starting to look elsewhere? Is that the initial kind of reaction? We start looking elsewhere to say, rather than, right, what can be done to try and get Irish produce on the shelves? Let's just look at where we can source this from. Or are there kind of, dare I say, ethical considerations within all that?
Well, I mean, there's a preference to buy local where possible, but there's with the way the weather has been, there'll definitely be shortages of field-grown Irish crops in the year coming. So that'll impact potatoes, carrots, iceberg lettuce, broccoli, anything that's in a field. and should have been sown or will be sown over the next few weeks will definitely have an impact. And some of that can be, if available, replaced by imports. But, you know, the farmers in the Netherlands and in France, I mean, I was over there in January, and huge amounts of protests and lots of disruption and unhappiness with new rules around nitrates and stuff like that that have been brought in. So you can't necessarily assume that the availability of the imports are going to be there. They will be there, but it'll drive the price up somewhat.
Yeah, that's I suppose that would be people's biggest fear. We've already seen you say huge price increases. Where does it stop?
Well, I think where does it stop? Where did it come from? The food, in my opinion, was too cheap on the retail shelf over the last few years. There was about 10 years of consistent downward costs and deflation on food. And I think that the average shopper kind of became out of touch with the cost of production of good quality, nutritious food and lost that sense of where the value was. And that was bad for farmers. And it was bad for shoppers because they were more inclined to waste food if they didn't put a value on it. Food waste is a big issue now.
Do you think producers at large, and this is a question we can put back to Kevin in a few minutes as well, like, are people, do you think, beginning to consider whether there's a future in this for us and just let us get our vegetables from wherever, or maybe just see certain veg disappear off our dinner plates?
No, well, I think it depends how diversified you are as a business. So if you start with where the big power is with the retailers, they're heavily diversified. If they're not making money in potatoes this year, then they'll make money on toothpaste or something else. They've got thousands of products that they can balance their books on. Even though they're fine margin businesses, they have the ability to do that. And then you bring it down a step to maybe one of the processors or packers who is focused just in the produce category. But then again, if you're not making on potatoes, then you probably will be making more money this year on anything that's grown in a glasshouse because the price of gas has come down. So they're heavily diversified. But then when you get down to farm level, when you're producing potatoes, you maybe have some grain production and maybe some cattle, then you're not heavily diversified. And if you have a couple of years of bad weather and you're not making money, then the appetite to continue and the ability to reinvest in your farm, to repair fences, to make sure that the place is safe to operate, that appetite and that ability reduces heavily. And then you have another issue, which is that farmers aren't getting any younger and there aren't many children of farmers who will want to then kind of step into their parents' place and take that farming enterprise on, because it's a really difficult enterprise if you're working 60 hours a week and the money that you're making equates to less than minimum wage.
We've seen many of the big supermarkets over the past number of years really look at putting almost an investment back into local farms for produce as well in order to get veg. I suppose that's guaranteeing them a certain quality, a certain provenance, maybe a certain guaranteed supply. Do the big supermarkets need to go even further and work closely with these farmers? And even if it is creating large polytunnels or facilities that maybe people like Kevin can continue to produce the quality products they're producing?
Well, I mean, the big retailers are operating strategically with growers, and they're doing that because they need security of supply. There's no point having a low price on the shelf if there's no product on the shelf. So they are working strategically with farmers locally, and it does give them lots of provenance and PR benefits, etc. But I think at a government level, there needs to be really long-term strategic thinking about food security and our dependence on imports and our ability to produce food locally with short supply chains, with transparent supply chains, and just the lower carbon footprint of producing food locally than abroad.
Yeah, because we're blessed in this country with the quality of land that we do have. A listener from Tullamore has texted in and says that she shops in Dunn stores all the time. It's very hard to get one Irish item. I think that's implied to vegetables. And I've seen in some of the shops, I've seen the very same myself, and even loose product, when you actually look at the label on the box, it's not coming from Ireland as well often. Kevin, I'm going to bring you back in there very quickly.
Yeah, there is great support from the Irish people, and the marketing, the big multiples, they know that, and they use, and there's a lot of tokenism there, supporting local, putting a picture of a local guy up, and the vast majority of the produce in them stores are imported, and then they're using fancy names, and they look Irish. You need to be a forensic scientist now to work out what you're getting in a bag. So there's a lot of, as I say, skullduggery goes on as well, where there is some support. There's a lot, because they know we've got brilliant support. Like, the Irish people really want to support Irish producers, and that's clearly evident, and it's clearly evident from the multiples as well, because most of them will be putting a picture up of a local guy in the front of the shop. We're supporting local because they know the people want to come in and support local, but it's not following through. It's definitely not falling down to smaller producers.
Yeah, I think it's up to us all as citizens to kind of take action there and actually look at what we're buying and how we can support
exactly.
Read
labels, yeah.
Absolutely. Kevin, sure. thanks a million. And listen, all the very best. We'll keep following you on Instagram there. You're giving daily updates on the situation. Hopefully you do get sowing and indeed keep that fantastic products that you have, that you're making, the Merry Mill.
Thanks for that. I just to give you a quick show of my website, it's www.themerrymill.ie, and we deliver direct to your door as well.
Absolutely.
We don't find us in the shop.
Great.
Thanks very much.
Thanks,
everyone.
Kevin. That's Kevin there, of course, and the Scully family that run the Merry Mill. Thanks to Malachy O'Connor as well, always for his expert and insightful input into the show. Time for me to wrap it up now. Thanks to Kieran Mullooly for coming on and talking about why he has decided to throw his name in the hat for the upcoming European elections, and to Tadhg Daly earlier from Nursing Home Ireland talking about their partnership with GAA Go, bringing free GAA games to over 30,000 nursing home residents. Okay, time for me to vacate the seat. Lorraine McCormick is up next with Feel Good Saturday. Thanks to Nelly for helping put it all together and lining up the calls. Thank you for all your texts. I'll talk to you next week.
Saturday View, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcluneEnergy.com. Midlands 103.